Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Mattsson, your host and the editor of Self-Build magazine.
So today we're joined by Anne and Paul Dyer, whose underground house was featured in the spring 2021 edition of Self-Build magazine. So you guys are serial self-builders now who have also renovated an old mill, I think you were saying, from in a previous life. So maybe we could start with where you were living when this new build project started taking seed. You guys are in County Fermanagh, aren't you? We were living in a house across the road from the project. What was, give us some context and background. Yeah.
Do you want to take that then?
Well, we moved across from Yorkshire. At the time, Anne's mother was starting to become infirm, living in Sligo, in Ballymoton, Sligo. Anne wanted to be nearer to help out with the care. And I was coming up to thinking about possibly retiring. It was early 60s. And this place came up for sale, which was actually being run as a B&B. This was across the road from where we live now. The main attraction for us in buying the place wasn't so much the B&B, it was the fact that it had a strip of land adjacent to the lake with a mooring. And boating has always been my interest. So when we bought the house, Anne carried on running it as a B&B for about a year. I was travelling backwards and forwards at weekends. And we decided long-term we couldn't really see us carrying on with the B&B, and thought it would be a good idea to apply for permission for a couple of holiday units, self-catering holiday units, on the side of the lake. That was the background to it.
So then you did run the house as a B&B as well then? Was that was doing well enough that you felt you could?
Well, it wasn't until the crash came in 2008. Anne can probably fill you in on that.
Yeah, it was quite busy, and in between times I was travelling to Ballymote, you know, to stay for two or three nights at a time, and then carrying on with the B&B as and when. But then all the travelling seemed to stop when we had the crash 2008 and 2009. So, and at that time my mother was needing a bit more care anyway, so we decided just to not bother with that anymore. And see how it went, really. And then we applied for 2006, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We applied for planning to build on the lakeside, and not really having much hope of getting it, because as we Martin, the architect, made us aware, you know, about the protected route road and a presumption against any sort of planning on the lakeside. But we decided anyway just to put it in and see what happened. And then
yeah,
you came back from fully full-time then, didn't you?
I did, yeah. 2009. Yeah. I moved across full-time.
But in the meantime, my mother was still, you know, getting a bit worse, and so we carried on with the care, and we knew we wouldn't be able to. It was never our intention to stay long-term, but, you know, circumstances happened, and this is how it's happened. And my mum died in 2011, but I also had a Down syndrome brother who, for as long as she was able to, my mother was looking after, and then my sister took on the care in Ballymote, so he was kind of, we were helping out there as well, weren't we?
Yeah.
And he died in 2012, but in 2011, much to our surprise, we actually got the planning permission through. Mm. So then it was a case of, what do we do now? do we kind of up stakes and go about, or do we do it? And we thought it'd be a shame not to do it, didn't we?
So yeah, well, it was. I think it takes such a long process to get it. We'd kind of given up. I think, yeah. I explained to you before what was going on. This was before the Good Friday Agreement, and the Minister for the Environment at the time, Lord Rocker, pretty much decided there'd be no further development in rural areas in the foreseeable future. And that caused huge upset, not just among private individuals, but there were
ongoing projects, weren't
yeah,
there? You know,
council
run projects, and yeah. So there was obviously various appeals then,
yeah,
weren't there?
And it ran on for about nearly 6 years. In the meantime, the Good Friday Agreement was agreed.
Yeah.
The storm came up and running, and so they carried on this arguments backwards and forth about how much development would be allowed, and eventually a planning document was produced, and Martin McLaughlin, he noticed in this detail of it that the requirement for not allowing any more than 5% increase in traffic if you had an existing access onto the road wasn't there. So Martin immediately wrote to the local authority pointing out that we'd fulfilled all other conditions. And as this condition, the 5% increase, wasn't mentioned, could we now have planning permission? And within 2 weeks, it was approved.
But Martin always thought he always said we were pushing at an open door. I think they really wanted to grant it because of the nature of the bills.
The way that came about, we knew we were going to be up against it, and we'd have to design something that would really fit into the landscape and certainly not stand out. And my first introduction to earth sheltered housing was probably 40 odd years ago, seeing
Scotland.
Yeah, the Findhorn community on the of the Moray Firth in Scotland. There was a picture I saw of a small reading room, earth sheltered, and it struck me how well it fitted into the landscape, and I kind of took an interest in it. And the idea of sheltering at that time, and then more or less forgot about it as years went by. But when it came to thinking of something that would fit into the site here, I thought that would fit the bill very well. I should explain that the site is actually facing northwest. Unfortunately, if it had been facing south, we would probably be looking at...
like a carbon neutral.
Yeah, something that would have been passive house type standard.
Yeah. So how did you deal with that design then? The house is underground, so you had to put in loads of skylights, was it, or how did you?
Well, the main elevation faces, as I said, northwest. That's looking out across the lake, and the rest of it is underground. So the roof lights became important, not just to get extra lighting, but also for any kind of solar gain. You get far more, I think it's something like 2.5 times more through a roof light than you get through normal windows. The one regret I did have is that we opted to put the insulation on the inside, and I think with the benefit of hindsight, I would have put it on the outside. I think I was fixated with the idea that to gain from the solar mass of the thermal mass of the walls, you would have to be getting direct sunlight, which I realised since is not the case. Any kind of heat would warm up the structure.
But didn't you have it? Didn't you want to have stone on the outside as well? You would have clad it then in stone from the external insulation, was it?
Well, the stone cladding is just on the one single elevation that overlooks the lake.
I think Paul was meaning on the, you know, the part that's buried, if you like, you know, the we have seen,
right.
You know what I mean? We have seen it since, haven't we, on Grand Design, I think.
So. Yeah.
People doing that, putting the insulation around the outside rather than, yeah. But Astrid. It still works pretty well, though, doesn't it?
It works very well. Yeah. In fact, the first time we had the family over was a Christmas dinner. And I think we were seated about 11 people for dinner.
And kept the doors open.
We did, yeah. We started off in the morning, well, lunchtime, I think. We lit a wood-burning stove in the main living area. And we lit the stove, didn't have the underfloor heating on. Had our meal by about 5 o'clock. And by about 6:30, everybody decided we shouldn't put any more wood on the fire. And by about 8:30, we had the doors open.
Please open the doors.
And that was just through body heat.
Yeah.
So what was the building method? Walk us through that.
The two end walls and the back wall are retaining walls. So there's a huge retaining wall structure, which is with steelwork tied into the steelwork in the floor slab. So we have an engineered floor slab and the steelwork leading up then into the retaining wall. The retaining wall itself consisted of an inner skin of 6-inch solid concrete block, 8-inch of reinforced concrete, and a 4-inch concrete block at the back of that. On the inside of that, there's then a cavity, 4-inch cavity with pumped silver bead insulation, and an inner skin of thermal blocks, thermal lightweight insulation blocks. On the outside of that is a damp-proof membrane, which is a bitumen, which is like a thick plastic with about 3 or 4 millimetres of bitumen coating on the inside. That sticks to the outside wall. And then to protect that, I put up another 4-inch solid concrete skin. Now, I know you can avoid that. You can use the raw materials on the market, which is like a corrugated plastic, which is supposed to lead the water away from the wall. The problem with that is if it gets damaged during backfilling, it fails. So we went for the old-fashioned way. We put a 4-inch solid concrete block wall to protect the damp-proof course. And then beyond that, from top to bottom, there's 0.5 metre of 2-inch plain stone. At the bottom of that is a 12-inch land drain going right around the property. And then above on the concrete roof itself, we had a precast, pre-insulated concrete beams. There's a membrane to protect the damp-proof membrane, if you like, a geotech membrane. And then the damp-proof membrane is a reconstituted rubber. Covers the whole roof and the joints are welded. That was done by specialist subcontractors. And that in turn oversails the blockwork on the building by about a foot, 30 centimetres. And that drains into the clean stone.
I should mention as well, Paul, that the roof does slope.
Oh, yeah, there is a slope from back to front. I think it's about 1 in 85.
So all the water runs off anyway.
Yeah. So we don't have any gutters and fall pipes and that kind of thing. It all just drains off to the back and then down and away from the land drain.
The front elevation then is?
Well, the front then is more of a conventional build. It's a thermal block inner skin. There's a 6-inch cavity, which is filled with the silver bead insulation. And then a stone frontage on it, which is about as low as we could get. It's Donegal quartzite, which is from about 20 miles up the coast. The roof, which is Anne's baby really, the wildflowers on the roof. Above the damp-proof membrane, there's a 4-inch layer of 20-millimeter pebbles, which act as drainage. Above that, there's another layer of geotech, and then there's a 4-inch layer of soil. And then, Anne, do you want to explain about the roof?
Yeah, well, we weren't quite sure what we were going to do. We knew it was going to be a green roof, and we kind of didn't fancy the sedum, which seems to be, you know,
well, it's the most popular monoculture. Yeah.
And at that time, the Ulster Wildlife Trust had launched a campaign called Save Our Magnificent Meadows, which to restore some of the native wildflowers which had been wiped out. One of the main ones being yellow rattle, which was always present in meadows until intensive farming took over, and then it was just completely wiped out. And it does have a useful purpose in that it will keep grass down, so it allows more space for wildflowers to grow. So we got in touch with them and we had a chat and talked about and decided we'd have a go, because they'd already done some projects, hadn't they?
Yeah.
On the verges and, you know, various places round about. And so they gave us some of the yellow rattle seeds, which we planted the end, just the very end, very last minute you could really, end of October, just about a day before we were due to travel to South Africa to see Paul's brother. And they came through beautifully, didn't they? In you know, the following spring. And then in between, all these other flowers started appearing. And so this is like fourth year now, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just cut it early on, April, maybe twice. If it starts, sometimes it grows early, doesn't it? It starts growing. So, and then leave it for the rest until about the end of August, until
basically cutting the grass before the wildflowers
appear. Yeah. And but what's happened since is that we have an area of grass in front of the house, which is lawn, you know, meant to be a lawn, and all these wildflower seeds have just flown over. So we just leave that as well now. Last year it was just covered. You've probably seen from the pictures, Astrid. It was covered in wildflowers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's beautiful. It's absolutely fabulous. Yeah.
The pictures are amazing as well. Oh, they're fabulous, aren't they?
Yeah. The thing that really impresses me about it is if you go up there in the summertime, you can actually hear it.
Yeah,
you can hear the roof buzzing. Yeah. You know, with bees and all kinds of winged creatures. It's really good.
So far we've had no problem, have we, with anything? You know, it's the we finished up having to install a small gas boiler because we found that the wood burner wouldn't be acceptable to building control
as a
main source of heat. But really, it doesn't come on very much, does it? And we don't.
No.
It was last time they came to fill it was probably last July, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they still haven't been back. So
we were considering a heat pump, an air source heat pump. But at the time, and we're going back a few years now.
Yeah, there didn't seem to be all that.
There seemed to be a lot of problems. And the installers were saying, I was speaking to some central heating guys, and they were saying that they're taking as many systems out as they're installing because people weren't happy with the running costs or the cost of breakdowns. And so I was a bit put off. I know it's improved since, and I think that's one thing I probably would. We use the two small gas boilers as a kind of a temporary measure just to get us on our way kind of thing. But the actual demand is so small that you probably won't get around to change it, and maybe someone else will.
Yeah, were we on the ECG,
the EPC.
The EPC thing, it's about B+.
Yeah, B+.
I think, yeah.
Well, how much energy are you using a year to heat and heat the house and hot water?
Well, we have hot water cooking because we have a gas cooker. And the heating, was it about £400?
£400
last year.
For a year, yeah. I mean, it'd be hard to beat that.
Yeah, and actually for a while, you know, we have been partly using it for the property next door, which we're just finishing off now.
So then are you guys getting a lot of solar gain from your roof lights? Is that where you feel like a lot of the...
Apart from there's about five or six weeks from like the end of November until January, where because, you know, there's the mountain at the, sort of on the other side from us, and the sun just doesn't get over the top, does it? So, but apart from that, yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, on a sunny day, the roof light in the main living area is approximately about 4 meters by 1.5 meters wide. And on a normal summer's day, that will raise the temperature in this room between 4 and 5 degrees. Just through wind.
And is it,
solar gain.
Yeah. And how are you finding the northwest elevation? Is it, do you get any sun coming through there?
No, we don't.
No, you don't actually get any direct.
A little bit on the east on the morning, first thing in summertime, and we get a bit in the evening time. The big thing for us in terms of the western elevation, if you like, is that if you go down to the lake in the evening, you get some fantastic sunsets. Oh. Really, they're amazing, the colours.
It's hard to have everything, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the view is important, obviously. Yeah, but you do kind of have everything with the roof lights.
Yeah.
You're getting the solar gains. I know it's not where you want them.
In an ideal world, you know, I mean, things are moving on now, aren't they? I think timber frame construction and all that, but... You know, for this site, it wouldn't have been, you know, you wouldn't have been able to do that, would we?
No, I think we did the right thing.
Yeah. But it does sit in quite well into the landscape and, you know, like, it looks as though almost it's always been there in a way. Yeah. So, yeah.
We do get a lot of people stopping and commenting on it now while it sits in.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a good thing.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mm-hmm. And we've also got the ventilation system as well, you know, the heat recovery.
Yeah, we decided to go down that route because it's always been a bugbear with me that the two warmest rooms in the house, the kitchen and the bathroom, and you put extractor fans in and extract the heat out to the cold air. So we opted to go for a whole house ventilation scheme with a heat recovery system. And it does work. You can, in fact, if you put your hands up to the vents, the incoming and the outgoing, you can feel the temperature is about the same. It really works. I'm really pleased with that. Yeah.
Very good. And is there much maintenance on it? You have just changed the filter once a year?
Well, to clean the filter,
we'll clean them,
every 6 months.
But, so far, so good,
And in terms of the construction work, how much of it was DIY? I think it was a large proportion, wasn't it?
All of it, really.
It'd be easy to say, which wasn't. We didn't do the electrical work and we didn't do the gas installation.
Or the plastering.
But just about everything else,
yeah.
Yeah. Or the roof bit, the tanking of the roof.
Oh, yeah, the tanking, yeah.
We did the tanking around the outside of the building. But on the roof, we've got specialist contractors in to do the damp roof membrane on the roof, Mm-hmm. And, of course, the roof itself, the structural pre-insulated concrete beams, that was Clear Concrete, did that for us. They supplied and installed it. I'm very impressed with them.
Yeah, that was part of building control, wasn't it? That was an issue with didn't building control insist on a pre-insulated slab? Was it?
The issue was the thermal bridging, and Martin introduced us to clear concrete as a way of getting around that because the beams are pre-insulated. Mm-hmm. So it stops any thermal bridging between your blockwork walls and the roof itself. But as I said earlier, had we gone down the other route and put the insulation on the outside, it would have overcome all those problems. Mm-hmm. We could have just used ordinary precast concrete beams.
There are always things you could have done differently, aren't there, with hindsight?
Yeah.
As our government are finding now, aren't they?
And any, like, dealing with building control, how was that managed by Martin as well, or were you at the cold face?
We did that directly. The actual, in terms of inspections, that wasn't
there was no problem. Yeah.
What I did find a bit of a bind was that I've been used to, most of my working life has been in North Yorkshire and with the various authorities there, and what tends to happen in building control in that part of the world is when you submit the drawing, it will normally be approved within a couple of weeks. And it's on the basis that even though you might not have agreed everything, it's on the basis that it will be agreed subject to and the following list. And that you will then sort out on site with the building inspector as it goes along. Whereas in this part of the world, everything has to be agreed
before agreed.
So consequently, to give you an example, the last thing I did before we moved from Yorkshire, we split the house we were living in, which had an integral garage at the side of it, and we split the garage off to a small semi-detached cottage. That took 2 weeks to go through building control and 6 weeks to go through planning.
Mm. The plan for that, by the way, was to kind of keep a property over there because, we have most of our family.
Yeah.
But we quickly realised it's not that easy, the difficulties of keeping properties. Mm. And
but by comparison here, we were 6.5 years through planning and a year and a half to get it through building control.
Well, listen, it's a bit more complex a project. You are on a super scenic route and
having said
it's an underground house and it's
having said that, Richard, we're quite pally now with the guy, aren't we?
No, yeah.
You wouldn't come out of his office at first because, I think at that time they were also so overstaffed anyway, but I think now it's been pruned down.
I think that was a hangover from the trouble times, wasn't it? The offices would be kept shut. You'd have to make an appointment to kind of get through the door, being a government.
There's still delays. But ever since then, it's been fine, no problem at all. So.
Yeah. I have to say, everyone in particular, down to the people like the delivery drivers.
Oh, they're all brilliant. They're all so cheerful. And, it wasn't the easiest side to get onto until we kind of sorted it out a bit. And so they were all really also good humoured around all the time. Yeah. So,
did you have to invest in that early on to try to make this site accessible?
No, there was an existing roadway down to the mooring. A stoned up track, but it was very overgrown when we first started.
Yeah.
And of course, as the job goes along, you're storing materials, and so consequently, that track now it's all cleared, it's probably about maybe 7 or 8 meters wide. At the time we started, you could hardly get a wheelbarrow down it, because it had just been abandoned and neglected. Mm. And it's quite steep. We've had one or two problems with the wagons getting stuck down there.
Fortunately, we have a lovely neighbour with a tractor and he's always...
A big four-wheel drive, all singing, all dancing tracks, and he just comes along and whips them out with no problem.
With your digger, don't forget. You've been known to rescue people with your digger.
Yeah, I have a mini digger, which is more than my right arm. It's all my arms and legs put together. It's a fantastic little machine.
He's threatening to take it with him wherever he goes.
to various in the garden, to be honest.
We were talking about that the other night because you sometimes have to confront these things, And I thought, I think we've travelled around a bit now. You might as well just be buried where you fall, sort of thing. Yeah. So that's when he said, "Oh my gosh!" He said, "Now you've said that, so I know what to do." You saw it all go first, of course.
So, and then in terms of the health and safety aspects that the topic.
You mean hard husband things? No.
I mean, well, you know, like you have to, weren't those construction design management, whatever they're called there, the health and safety obligations, those were in place already, I think.
Issue, well, it wasn't an issue really. When the contractors were on site doing the roof, we had to sort of beef up the scaffolding that was around more than I'd been working on, kind of thing. But it wasn't really that much of a problem. It was just
They do adopt a very, you know, what was it that guy said? He said, "Don't ask permission, just ask
seek forgiveness.
Just seek forgiveness."
Gosh. And again, in
terms of access, they said there's only one elevation we actually needed scaffolding. You know, that's the stone belt one overlooking the lake, you know, the main elevation.
We had proper scaffolding up past it.
I'm not worried. And claiming back VAT, was that straightforward enough? Or
not really. In fact, we're still in the process of that on the second property.
No, they did give it in the end.
Because, we did get it.
Yeah, because you're entitled to. I mean, this is not a big commercial enterprise. It's for for our own use and so.
See, basically, if it's being built,
it's for your own use.
If it's for your own use, you're entitled to claim it back. And that only actually came about in, was it 2010?
Somebody challenged the ruling because you could never claim it on anything that was designated as holiday
property.
Mm-hmm. Before, but somebody challenged that ruling through the High Court and won it. So
this is in the UK, of course.
So the ruling now is if it's just for your own use, then you're entitled to claim it. So
it wasn't too, because they can be a bit finickety about.
Oh well, there were
claiming.
It took us a while, didn't it? So
the first approach we made, this person we were speaking to in the VAT office.
Knew nothing about it.
He just said you're not entitled to it, and that was that, as far as he was concerned.
Yeah. Anyway, we got
off the phone kind of thing. Yeah.
We did get it, but
we spoke to our accountant, and she assured us that we were entitled to it. And so we carried on and persisted, and eventually they agreed. But we had to prove the fact that we're using it for our own purpose. And then we were queried about why we were living in it. We didn't have planning permission to live in it. This is for money. It's not. Everything around here is a bit Wild West.
If anybody chose to complain around here, then I don't think anybody.
No.
And the planners will know very well, won't they? Anyway, we're in isolation now, so the township does something.
Yeah. We've just had our first jabs been in the...
Yeah, we have, yeah.
In the you got your jabs, fair play.
We were supposed to be having our last 50th wedding anniversary last year. And we decided, by the end of March, we knew it wasn't going to happen, so we just cancelled it. And now we put it back to August this year, and I think we're probably going to have to cancel it again.
Looking
But in the meantime, there's lots of other celebrations piling up now, aren't there?
We're accumulating.
One of our daughters' 50th birthday next week.
One of our sisters is 70th.
And 70th, so, so we'll have them all together.
It will be a hell of a party.
Yeah, exactly. Massive parties after this is over, I tell you. And kind of main tips, advice for others that are thinking of going down a similar route as you.
It will be all-consuming. I think you have to accept that. We've done this several times before, so we know the scale. But it can take over your life, and the trick is not to let it,
If you can avoid it. But it's worth it in the end, though.
It's a very satisfying thing to do,
it's
no
worth
doubt.
It in the end.
And we have enjoyed it. I mean, the thing about this one in particular.
We enjoy it. Look, it gets us up in the morning. It's great. It's just great to have something to do, isn't it?
At the age we're at, when we started this, I mean, how old were we? Let's 60s, pushing 70, when we actually started building.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really, my general health has improved, I have to say. I was having problems at one time with my hands, arthritis in my joints and that kind of thing. Mm. And when I started walling blocks again after a gap of a few years, it improved tremendously, and it's kind of kept us fit and healthy and on the bone.
Yeah, and I've learned new skills as well, so
yeah.
Apart from, everything else. I did some of the block work.
Yeah.
And
the thing this time for us is, it's been different as the years have gone along. When we've done it in the past, we've had family pressures. You know, we've done it when we're bringing up children, bringing up the family, and, of course, financial pressures that go with that. But this time we didn't have any of that because, you know, we've no mortgage or anything.
Yeah.
So it's...
Yeah, it's been, on the whole, it's been...
And the other thing is that we're both very keen on the wildlife situation. And the spot where we are is actually fantastic. I mean, we've got pine mountains, we've got otters in the lake, kingfishers, swans coming in the lake. Yeah. You know, and this goes on every day, so you're aware of that and you're enjoying it every day, you know.
So that means... there's going to be a next project then. You have to keep fit and healthy. What's the next project?
Well,
watch this space.
Yeah, watch this space. It's funny you should say that. I mean, we've had one or two like disasters, like we decided to, polish concrete floors, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Never having done it before, of course. Well, that was a disaster. the mix wasn't right. You know, so there's no way you could...
Yeah, we finished it with too many soft spots.
Yeah.
We ended up abandoning the idea of polishing it and tiled it. But
out of that then, because we'd bought some big bags of...
some coloured aggregate.
You know, to mix in, to make the colours. And I thought, maybe I'll start doing some pavings, you know, flags for the outside. So Paul made me some moulds.
Yeah.
And...
But I remember you asking me how many you think we'll need, and I said, it's going to be a couple of hundred at least. So knowing it'd be at least 500 or more, you know.
I've done them, yeah.
So have you made them?
Yeah, they're all laid. They're passed outside. And
she doesn't do crochet or anything like that. She's doing this man mixer.
Yeah. Well, listen, it is more useful in many ways.
Yeah. So that was one sort of, but it was good fun in a way because we had one son and two grandsons, strapping lads, to help us with the mixing and everything. It was really nice though. We had a good time, didn't we?
Yeah.
Even though it didn't work out right, but it probably taught them something as well. So. Yeah.
If your family do get involved, it is good. It's great fun. Mm.
Yeah, 100%. So then just the last bits would be just about keeping on top of costs. I suppose tips in relation to that. I mean, we touched upon a few, but as well as how did you guys, how did you guys manage the finances? Was it on an Excel sheet or...? Keeping track of it in a ledger?
No, just keeping invoices and
usually keeps the track of the finances.
No, I don't do spreadsheets for when I did the VAT return, but not on a big scale, no.
The biggest thing, of course, is always labour, and of course most of the labour was our own. So
we had accounts with Cathgarth, Murdoch's it is now.
Yeah.
And who else do we have account with? The people that supply the stone,
The advice. I think the advice I would give, because I mean, I've had a lifetime of being self-employed as a building contractor. And the thing is the advice I would give to other people is to try not to change your mind. It always gets costly because there are always knock-on effects. You know, when you change an issue, you change any kind of aspect of the build, and there's always a knock-on effect, and it can add up to quite a lot of money. So I think the advice really would be to spend as much time as you can in the pre-planning stage and know what you want and stick with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were there any changes on your build?
Well, it was less relevant for us because we'd be doing it anyway, you know. So that was the biggest one, as Anne had said, the failure with the polished concrete floor. Mm. But in terms of changes, I think we added a couple of tall, narrow windows on the front.
Oh, that's right. We did that. Yeah. Originally, it was just going to be the
just
in the main room.
In the living room, it would just have been
because it curves
the big double doors.
Mm-hmm. It's got like a curve on it. You can see from the pictures. So we decided to just put two like narrow windows either side of the doors, which I'm glad we did because you could just get a nice
That was an afterthought. We're actually just sat one day on a pile of blocks having a cup of coffee and decided it'd be a good thing just to. Before I'd actually built the walls, I just started on the curb bits and realised that it would add to it just to have those. They're only about a foot wide, aren't they? About 30 centimetres wide.
It gives a nice framed view, either side. So.
Other than that, I think.
I can't think of any. But if you're going to do it yourself, you have to be, you have to get on quite well to work together.
There's a very high incidence of divorce among self-builders. It's about 25% higher than the rest of the country.
I'm sure that's an official statistic.
It is, yeah.
So any other tips, advice, anything we didn't touch upon that?
One thing, going back to the earth sheltered idea and the idea of using concrete and using the thermal mass in the concrete. I do remember when I first became interested in the earth shelter thing 40 odd years ago, and bear in mind these statistics now have changed because there's been such improvement in insulation in houses. But at the time, I came across some research that was showing that if you take the whole life of a building and all the energy used in producing the materials, in producing the building, the maintenance costs, the heating costs, the lighting, cooking, hot water, maintenance and repair work kind of thing, over a lifetime of a building, which at the time this study was based on a 60-year lifespan. Of all that energy added up together, only 5% was used in the actual construction. So you realise then how important it becomes. You can offset the cost of concrete, if you like. I'm talking now not the financial cost, I'm talking about the embedded energy cost in producing concrete. If you look at the long-term effect it can have, long-term savings, I think that is something worth taking into account. Mm. People often come and look at this and say, I've never described these houses as eco houses. Other people have done that. And then you challenge the saying, how can you call it an eco house with all the concrete in it? Well, you've got to do the sums and all the life of the house, it works.
No, that's brilliant. Well, listen, guys, thanks so much. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
That's it for this Self-Build Plus podcast episode. Tune in next time for more tips and advice from experts and self-builders alike. And make sure to explore everything Self-Build Plus has to offer. The Self-Build Plus journey guides you through the process of building and home improving. The Self-Build Plus forum allows you to share and learn from other self-builders. While the Self-Build Plus videos and our Self-Build Plus virtual events are packed with information and advice. With Self-Build, stop dreaming, start building.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.